panelists will share on steps 4 and 5. I will read step 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Our first panelist today is Mike B. Mike B. is from Turtle Rock Big Book Study in Irvine, California. Will you please help me welcome him?
Hi, I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I didn't pick out this shirt. Somebody told me to wear it. But on steps 4 and 5, I think that was a big thing for me to do. Because I remember when I first came in, I was walking on eggshells. I had pretty much zero faith in my ability to stay sober. And I remember I had just done step 3, and I really wanted to get 4 and 5. Well, I wanted to get 4 done, and then I remember after I did it pretty quickly, and then I remember after I got 4 done, I was nervous that I was going to have to read this off to somebody. And I was thinking of taking stuff off, because I was embarrassed about the stuff I was having to read off. But then I pretty much did it straight out of the book, like nothing special. I did the fifth step, and then I felt like a huge relief. Because prior to that, I mean, pretty much I was lying, pretty much like at least half of everything I was saying was a lie. And I was lying every single day. And then to have to be honest with somebody and talk about what was going on with me, it was interesting. I mean, I'd been to therapists and doctors, and I just lied to them even. And it was a good experience having to do that. And then I felt like all that stuff, well, at the time, I think the first one, I'd done a few since I've been sober, but I think the first one I did, I felt the presence of God the most. I felt like all this stuff that was blocking me off was taken away. I remember I did the hour afterwards, and I felt like a really strong presence, and I felt like I finally had a conscious contact with God. And I really didn't want to drink anymore. I remember every day before that, I was waking up in the morning, and my heart was pounding out of my chest, and I was just like so depressed that I was going to have to go through the day without a drink. And I remember I was going to sleep at night, and I was depressed. I wasn't going to get to wake up the next day, and I was walking on eggshells. I kept having to do the one day at a time thing. Like, I kept telling myself I was going to drink tomorrow, and I was going to drink tomorrow, and then I'd make another drink tomorrow. And then after I did the fourth and fifth, I felt the relief. I didn't feel like drinking anymore. And so that was an interesting experience. And I was able to just go through the rest of the steps and stay sober. But after doing that, I've had to do, I don't know, I've gone through the steps a couple other times with different sponsors. And what happens with me is I slack off on my 10th step, and then I accumulate a bunch of stuff, and I have a bunch of resentments and fears. And I'll also slack off on my 3rd step. I'll forget that I can rely on God for everything. And each time it's the same experience. You know, I write it down. I do it quickly. I ask God to show me the truth about what's going on with me. And I try not to sit on it. I'd like spend all my free time in it, because when I've done them, it's when I need some relief. And I just try and get it over with as soon as possible and do it as thoroughly as possible too. But I went through it recently. In the past year, I was having a tough time, and I was just going nuts. I noticed it on the road especially. Like, I wanted to kill everybody, and And I was like getting afraid to drive because I just like couldn't stand the people on the road, and I wanted to rip people out of their cars and stuff. And I felt like I was going crazy, and I wasn't feeling happy, joyous, and free. And so I went through it, and of course, this was, since I got sober, I've done these, and the most recent one was the longest one. It's like 100 resentments, and then my fears were everything, and my sex inventory wasn't too great, and everything was just a mess. And then I realized, I didn't realize, my sponsor pointed out to me that I wasn't working a third step. I was praying every single day, so I thought I was relying on God. Like, I wake up every single morning, I'd say my prayers, and I'd go about my day. And then my sponsor pointed out that I was just relying on God to keep me sober, and I wasn't relying on God for anything else. And I had no idea I was doing that, and it was a big eye-opener because I had all these fears about everything, and I thought that everything was on me. And I don't know, for some reason I want everything to be on me. I don't really want God to have all this power, but it was driving me nuts that I was having to do all this stuff, and nothing seemed to work out. And people were driving me nuts. I wanted to control everybody, and I wasn't feeling good. And after that, my sponsor was able to point out that, you know, I needed to go back and redo my third step. And I had no idea that that was the issue. I was like, I thought that my main issue was I just had all these resentments that I needed to get rid of. And it ended up being that all my resentments were all the same stuff. And he was like, look, I don't even need to hear this one. Like, I had all this, we just skipped over a whole bunch because it was all the same stuff. There was all these people on there that I didn't even talk to. And I just, like, people from meetings that I didn't like the looks of or whatever. And he was like, we can skip these. And so that's what happened. It was interesting. I had no idea that was the problem. You know, I've read the book a bunch of times. I go to book studies, and then it was really eye-opening to see that stuff. And it was really embarrassing because at the time I had like 4.5 years sober, so I was like, I have my stuff together, like I know everything. And I thought like I was doing really great, and I just needed to get some stuff off my chest. And yeah, I was missing like a whole big part of the program. And I don't know, it's important for me to be looking at this stuff because like when I'm living in resentments and I'm not getting honest with somebody about it and looking at my part, I go nuts. And it's easy for me not to do this stuff because I'll be like, you know, that's not really a resentment because they're just annoying and anybody would get mad at them. And I'll tell myself this stuff, and I'll also tell myself, you know, I shouldn't be resentful at them, even though I am. So then I guess I'm not really resentful because I shouldn't be. And then over time, I accumulate the stuff, and then the next day I know I'm going nuts. And then with fears, too, if I'm not looking at it, like, then fears run in my life. I feel, then I'm like, I'm living in a prison of, and my whole life is run by fear, and I don't get to make decisions because fear is making them for me. And those things accumulate too. If I'm not staying on top of them, I could be going nuts. And all in all, I think that's where I get the most relief is when I do these inventories. And honestly, I really don't like doing them. It's nothing I look forward to, and it doesn't come natural to me. My sponsor keeps pointing it out. Even recently, I've been doing 10 steps regularly for the past year, which is a new thing for me because I just was doing it in my head, or I was calling people up and complaining about stuff instead of just doing a 10 step. But even recently, my sponsor said that I needed to take an inventory because I started just doing the same thing with him, where I was calling him up and complaining about stuff, and I start going crazy. So, it's important for me to keep doing this. And it's important for me to share it with somebody too, because I'll write it down or I'll do it in my head, and then it's just not the same. I don't get the same relief. I mean, it's important to for me to share it, and that's my least favorite part of the whole thing. Putting the list together and making the inventory isn't really a big deal, but the sharing, I just dread doing it. I hate having being like there's something wrong with me. I feel like at this point, my head tells me at this point, like, oh yeah, you know, you should have your stuff together. You shouldn't be getting resentful anymore. You should have no fears and this and that. But it says in the book, you know, that this stuff's going to crop up and I have to deal with it. So I think that's pretty much all I got. Thanks, Jeff, for letting me speak.
Thank you. Next, we have Chris B. from Buckley Listen and Learn, AFG. She's from Aurora, Colorado. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups. Good timing on the call up here, because that spider was walking right across, right there, right? So that was a good time to be called up here. Thank you. Have you ever felt like God has got you? Like you're just so set with God that you just really don't need to do much? Like prepare, read, pack your clothes for Fellowship of the Spirit? Half of my clothing is hanging in the hallway at my house, the lower half. But it's cool. You can't see beyond the podium. So use your imagination. I'm surprised I'm speaking on step four when really I woke up this morning in step one, like ultimate powerlessness, right? Like God should have known to pack those clothes. Why wouldn't he have brought them? And then I have to get up in front of all of you. And I have enough respect for the program to dress up. So I will ask your forgiveness for not being more prepared when I got here. But it's a really good example of how this program works, because all of my best laid plans, you know, I planned what I was going to wear. I ironed it. I hung it. I hung the tops on one side and the bottoms on the other because I was hyper organized. That's what I do. So again, my name is Chris. I am from the Buckley Listen and Learn family groups in Aurora. And I have been in program. I love hearing AAers talk about their sobriety date, and I'd like to tell you my serenity date, except I blew it this morning again. So every day is day one for me. I've been in program 11 years this August, and I will go ahead and like front load that, like it'll be 11 years in August, because I'll still be crazy in August, so it's okay, I can still come. Yeah, thankfully you guys don't kick me out. And I am honored and humbled to be here. And just standing at this podium is proof that this program is freaking amazing. There's a reason these steps go in order. That was the nicest thing my sponsor ever said to me. You don't have to do step four yet. You have to do steps one, two, and three first. So I get to wake up in the morning and realize I have no clothes, and I get to be powerless, and then I get to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. And then I get to hope to God that nothing spills on these shorts for the next 4 days. And I get to take an inventory of my clothing and go, well, it's funky pajama pad bottoms or the shorts I wore yesterday. Or nothing at all, which is also an option. Don't be surprised. Taking an inventory, the big book says it is a fact-finding job, right? Page 64. All you AAers who have all the pages memorized, I'm very jealous. My sponsor does that too. And I'm really blessed to have been able to find a sponsor who is a big book thumper. Somebody was talking about that yesterday. Even in Al-Anon, she's a big book thumper. And I'm grateful for that, because I was first introduced to the big book when my mother got sober 20 years ago. And the big book that I use today is her very first one. Oh, it is the podium. Something about this spot. And it's got all her underlinings and all of her highlights, and then it's got my underlinings and my highlights, and hers were yellow and mine were pink, and so there's a lot of orange in my big book. It is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. And right below that, then it says, he cannot fool himself about value. If I were going to take an inventory in a store, I would go in and I'd say, I'm out of cans of this and I have extra cans of that. When I took my own personal inventory, I had plenty of cans of judgment. I had lots of cans of fear and bulletproofness. My first memories of my mom, my third memory of my mother was her being drunk, and I was in my late fours or early fives. Didn't your life start like that? Like, in my threes. Oh, Al-Anon salute. Anyway, in my late fours, my first memory is my mom being really drunk, and of course there was a lot of people there, and everybody was really drunk, and I don't remember all of the memory. I'm not sure what happened, but something scared me. She may have fallen down or something. And I was sitting at the top of the stairs, and my memory is of her crawling on all of her hands and knees up the stairs towards me. And when she got there, she said, "What's wrong, honey?" Or "What's wrong?" Something like that. And I said, and I didn't know what to say, actually, because by four I had learned that the words "I don't know" were not allowed in my house. "Who broke this lamp?" "I don't know." "No, not the right answer." So I couldn't say "I don't know." But in that moment, I realized I did not know what I was afraid of. I was just scared. And that started my fear inventory. And there came my big can of fear. And I carried that around till I was 13. And then my parents got a divorce, and we moved to a slightly less nicer side of the neighborhood, and I met all the bad kids. And I learned I could turn my fear into 10 feet tall and bulletproof. And as a 6 foot tall woman, and I was 6 feet by 13, that was easy to do, because everybody was afraid of me, because I was this big already. So when it came time to do my inventory, I had a lot of cans of fear and a lot of cans of, you know, the B word. And I had no cans of compassion, and my cans of care had been relabeled with control, fix, do. I didn't realize that underneath that control label was the desire to care for people, and that when I said, "Don't drink, don't drive, get out of the car," all of those things I tried to fix about your life was just me really saying, "I love you and I don't want to see you get hurt." What I found out in this program was that my honesty is, "I love you and I don't want to see you get hurt." That's it. Not, "Give me your keys," not, "Don't drink another bottle," not, "Let me pour that out." None of that is my truth. My truth is, "I love you." And I got it to be able to be in this program. I'll back up a little bit. I got into this program 11 years ago, but I didn't start working the program right away. I was being warmed by the fire, so sitting by the fire and getting warmed was fine with me. And after 5 years of that, I knew I needed to walk through the fire to become transformed. And there's another AA Al-Anon conference where boys aren't allowed sometimes every year. And at that conference, I was lucky to meet my sponsor, and only because I got out of God's way. And so this program is all about God's will, right? I went up there, I said, I'm not going to get a sponsor, I'm not going to work this program. Let's be honest, God, I'm not interested. I just want some spiritual warmth. And I showed up, and he did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Resentment is the number one offender. From it stems all of our spiritual... I know the next word is disease, and every time I read it dis-ease, because it is my spiritual dis-ease. And that's what brought me into working the actual program, because even after 5 years of hanging out and even going to church and all those other things that I thought I was doing so well, I still lied, I still was fearful, and I still was a huge judgment person. I judged everybody by the way they looked or acted or whatever. By the way, nice shirt. Can I borrow that later? I don't have any clothes to wear. I really like that shirt. And I really like that my sponsor pointed out recently, I'm working my second fourth step, which is, again, an honor and humbling experience to be asked, hey, would you share on the fourth and fifth step? Really? Right now when I'm working my second fourth step? Really? That was so apropos. And, of course, my sponsor's standing right there, so I can't say no. And then she points out that in that first resentment Mr. Brown lists about Mr. Brown, it's 19 words. And those are serious, serious offenses. Like, you're hitting on my wife and you're going to take my job? That's Like, let me sit down and write a resentment about that crap. It'll be a book. And then you were trying to take my job. You know, I can go on and on. So my spiritual dis-ease, even after attempting to be the best person I could, I still wasn't. I was still very deficient. And I did my steps 1, 2, and 3, and I sat down to do my inventory. And I got to see the truth. I didn't get to beat myself up. I didn't get to go, oh, look at that can of control. Now let's see if I can burn the whole restaurant down with it. I just got to say, there's a can, and there's a missing can. And I got to fill the areas that were deficient. And I got to be honest about the areas that I needed to get honest with myself, like the can of liar. If you had asked me 10 years ago if I was a liar, I would have told you, no. No liar. I'm not just not a liar. I'm brutally honest. It's one of my favorite things, brutally honest. Do you know what brutally honest really means? It means I'm not going to mind my own business, and I'm pretty sure I know what's best for you. Or it means I am the queen of overdisclosure so that you will never know what's really going on. Because if I tell you about all my sexual escapades and other things, then you will never have to know when I'm just having a bad day. Or if you ever decided to use any of it against me, I could just go, I know, I'm the one who told you that. And now none of it hurts me. Had you told me 11 years ago that I was a liar, I would have told you that's not even possible. And yet in this program, what I found out is that from 4 years old, I was starting to develop an ability to read your mind. You didn't know that, did you? I'm reading all of your minds right now. Stop it. That was dirty. If you asked me what I wanted for lunch, I would not tell you what I wanted for lunch. I would go through the process of determining what it is that you think I should be eating for lunch, and that would be the answer I would give you. If you asked me if I had super salad, I would think, now does this person want me to be eating warm foods or something healthy? And then I would say, a salad, of course. I probably ate a bag of popcorn. I'm a single woman. I have cereal for dinner. Don't ask me what I ate today. I don't know how to be honest with other people because I don't know who I didn't know who I was. I didn't know how to say, I know who I am, I know what I like, and I know what I've done. I knew how to cover all that up. So for me to be able to be brutally honest in this program, I had to start by taking an inventory so I knew who I even was. And then I could say, oh, I did lie. I lied a lot. And I did it out of fear. And I did it from a place of fear because I didn't know who I was. And I loved what Malia said. What did she say? Acceptance sucker? Yeah, that's what I was. I wanted you to accept me no matter what it took. So I know that alcoholics use the bottle to accomplish that. I used everything else I could. I was talking to a friend the other day about alcoholics and Al-Anoners, and I said, you know, the saying is they take a drink takes a drink, and the drink takes them. I say, I get behind the wheel of a car, I'm drunk. You cut me off, I'm drunk. You don't even have to cut me off, you just have to actually be in front of me. And I'm drunk with rage. I'm drunk with power. I'm drunk with my own self-will. I'm drunk with ego. I am determined that I'm the only person on the road who should be allowed to travel, and you should get out of my way, unless you're behind me. In which case, you need to slow down, because you are going far too fast, and you need to get away from my bumper. It doesn't matter if you're in the front or in the back. I'm drunk because I'm awake. And every day I wake up, I get to take the third step prayer and hope that, you know, that my disease, bottle or not, will not come creeping up into my psyche. On page 66, you know, there's a lot of laughter and smiling and joking in this program. Really? Okay. Everybody's up here. Oh, I got 4 minutes left. Yeah, no, I was talking. There's a lot of smiling and joking in this program, and it's awesome. And it's great that we can laugh and smile and be happy today. But this is a serious program for a serious disease that takes lives on both sides of the bottle. And 2 years after working with my sponsor, one of my sisters, one of my sponsor's sponsees, shot herself in the chest. Last year, my best friend's ex-husband, hung himself in a blackout and apparently realized what he was doing right at the last minute, but wasn't able to save himself. On page 66, there are six death threats. I mean, this is a serious disease. Infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. To drink is to die. These things are poison. It's a serious disease, and I could kill myself with denial. I didn't know I was lying, but I could have killed myself with that veil that I walked around with because I had no idea what was really going on. And if I didn't kill myself, I could end up in jail by killing you because that was definitely on my list of things to do, especially if you upset me. So it's a program of action, right? Steps 4 and 5 especially, there's a lot of action. You make the list, you take the inventory, and then you tell someone. My sponsor said something very peculiar last week. She said, this is not a program for those who need it. This is not a program for those who want it. Really? It's a program for those who work it. Oh, yeah. The work, the actual action. So, again, making the list was pretty easy. Like, I can get pretty honest with myself on paper when no one's around, and then I found I was stuck. I could not move past my step 4 because there was one thing on it I couldn't get over. And I called my sponsor, my loving sponsor. Steps 4 and 5 for me are rounded, summed up in one word, and that is trust. I couldn't trust anybody before this program. I have a sponsor I can trust wholeheartedly today. And I called her up and I said, this one thing is bugging me and I can't tell you. And she said, what is it? And I told her and she said, okay, feel better? And that was it. There was no judgment. She didn't kick me out of the program. Admitted to God. Okay, well, God knows most of my wrongdoings. Admitted to myself, well, again, I don't really know what that means. I have a tendency to lie. And admitted to another person. It is when I'm actually saying it out loud to the other person or reading it off the paper out loud to the other person do I hear it with my own ears and finally understand what I've written down. All of that is awesome. The exact nature of our wrongs. Being able to get the exact nature. Not that I am terrible, not that I'm the most horrible person on the planet, but that sometimes I do lie because I don't really know who I am. Once I know the exact nature of my wrongs, I can then share them. That was a miracle. This last month, I had the opportunity to be on the other end of that. It was awesome to be able to trust my sponsor enough to share with her my fourth step. But to be the woman who got to hear someone else's fourth step was the most humbling and amazing. And again, if you told me 11 years ago that somebody would be able to trust me enough to tell me their deepest, darkest secrets, and that I would sit without judgment and love them unconditionally, well, I probably would have thought you were lying. And it's the miracles of this program. I like to sum up the program with one word, and that is simply that this program is a miracle. And I will just end with page 71. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. Thank you.
Next, we'll have Jeff N. from Rule 62, Rapid City, South Dakota.
Good morning. My name is Jeff, and I am an alcoholic. I didn't want to follow that. I'm a member of the Rule 62 group. We meet at noon in Rapid City, South Dakota. We're an open meeting, Rule 62. We don't take ourselves very seriously, but we take recovery very seriously. I've been continuously sober since August 20th of 1983, and for that I'm very grateful to you. And I take no credit for that myself. I got up today, and I want to apologize to those of you who are new. I'm just as crazy, only in a different way, than I was 30 years ago. Jeff asked me to talk about my fourth and fifth step, and I see he conveniently left the room. No, he's back there. And I thought if I had a dramatic experience around that, and I thought, no, but I've had two completely different four steps. And I want to share a little bit about those with you. And to share about the first one, what I want to tell you is that I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1982. Prior to that, I was invited to Alcoholics Anonymous by a good friend who told me on a Thursday morning that, you know, if I wanted to come out to the club one day, we had breakfast on Sunday morning, and he'd buy, and I might meet some guys I knew and I really liked. And I told him I might stop by someday, and that was 1974. So I was probably looking really good as a young man that I was invited to AA when I was 24 years old. But nonetheless, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1982. My wife was unmanageable. I read the steps. I didn't have a problem with the insanity, and I'll get to the fourth step. But, you know, I wasn't going to turn my will and my life over. And the only inventory I was taking was yours. And if there was a higher power, he knew all this stuff anyway, and I certainly wasn't going to tell anybody until the statute had run out. So there was no fourth and fifth step. And I've heard it said, and I liked it, I didn't take the third, I skipped the fourth and bought a fifth. Hence, my sobriety date is not a September of 1982. I am grateful that you read how it works in your meetings, because you told me that I may be constitutionally incapable of being completely honest, and that scared me as much as drinking and living this way of life and dying. So I sat down after probably a year of sitting in the meetings, listening, talking to a sponsor, and I did it. I opened the book to page 60, whatever. I cracked it in this crappy little homemade desk I'd made with a yellow tablet. And I wrote down the four-column inventory. I wrote down those people that I was angry with, things I'd done wrong, institutions I had resentments against, and my part in them. And I will tell you, that wasn't a great fourth step. I did not go back a long ways in my life. And for whatever reason, I don't have a lot of childhood memories. So, you know, I went back to the stuff that was keeping me drunk. You know, my self-centeredness, my low self-esteem, my anger at institutions, because it was always your fault. You know that. Tom's shaking his head. You know that. It was your fault. You know, if I could just find a good woman. Another longer story, so we won't go there. But I did write down my part in it. The gentleman I was working with told me I had to look at my side of the street, that was important, and he heard my fifth step. And I stayed sober. And I made some amends to those closest to me and the people I worked with. And I would sit in meetings and I would say, well, you know, there's a lot of those people, you know, those women that I'll never find. Yeah, well, there was two women and they lived across the street. Let's get real. But back to the fourth and fifth step. I had the opportunity, some of the gifts of sobriety are like steady employment, my trifecta, having a driver's license, insurance, and license plates on a car, all at the same time. I couldn't manage that drunk. And I was living in Minnesota, and I heard a fellow say, well, my sponsor told me I needed to do a four-step, and I couldn't get around to it. So I thought, well, I'll call his priest and schedule my fifth step, and he's really busy, so I'll have a lot of time. And he called the guy, and the guy said, yeah, how about Thursday? So I thought, okay. And I was at a place in my career and in my home life that I wasn't really comfortable in what was going on. And I found myself snapping at people a lot. I'm wondering if I'd chosen the right profession or I was restless, irritable, and discontent. I was having a terrible time. So I wrote a fourth step. And I called my sponsor, who's still my sponsor, and I said, I'd like you to hear my fifth step. He's a very wise man. He looked at me and said, call Kurt. Now, I didn't want to call Kurt. I like Kurt, but Kurt was a Lutheran minister. I didn't go to church. I didn't want to call Kurt. Kurt was a Marine. I wasn't in the military. I didn't want to talk to Kurt. Kurt lived in a very wealthy suburb, and I still viewed myself as blue collar. I didn't want to talk to Kurt. But I called Kurt, and he said, how about Thursday? So I have a written four-step that was very honest and really touched some things that were causing me difficulties and was a four-column inventory. And I met with Kurt. And what was remarkable about that compared to the first one is I walked in, I sat down with my friend Kurt, and he had three chairs there. And he said, God is with us, you know. I'm a little thick. I needed the third chair. I needed to understand not only that God knew what I'd done, but he was there with me in this experience. One of the things on that was a situation with my oldest son. And I talked about that openly for the first time in a number of years. And this man that I didn't want to talk to, who now I'm very close to, today yet, looked at me and said, why don't you just look at him and say, I'm sorry I wasn't the father you deserved. And then practice living amends. And what that has done for the relationship of my son and I is remarkable. The important thing I see in the fifth step today, and if you haven't figured it out, I have a pretty enormous ego. And I'm really blown away by listening to you people. You guys are fantastic. But what I learned from my last fifth step with Kurt was that it was the exact nature of my wrongs. Because if I hurt you, I will minimize that. It wasn't that big a deal. You know, you could spare the 100 anyway. Really, everybody does that. Or I can blow it completely out of proportion. My ego does not have clear vision of what goes on in the world. God does. My ego makes me greater than or less than constantly. I do it when I'm sitting there. I do it when I'm standing here. I do it all the time without something to level me. And God does that for me in my morning meditation and my ongoing meditation during the day. But what the fifth step does for me, she's covering me up. Am I done? I'm done. I'm plenty of time or I'm done? Oh, I got 5 minutes. Oh, my goodness. Now I lost my train of thought. See how my ego is? Obviously, I talk too long or not long enough. My ego gets me in so much trouble. Oh, my goodness. The exact nature of my wrongs. If I have to lay out to you what happened, openly and honestly, you will say to me, this is what it looks like. This is how we can fix it. You're a human being. Let's give it to God. He's sitting there in the empty chair. Thank you, my friend Kurt. Now, I wore a shirt intentionally today. One of the things I got to do in sobriety in another part of my life is I went to Marine boot camp at 61 years old and survived. It's a little bit of a longer story. But I did everything they asked me to do, and I'm not going to pretend it was what an 18-year-old will do. It was about, you know, like 1% of what an 18-year-old will do, but nonetheless, I'm here to talk about it. And I earned this shirt. And the great thing about this shirt is what it says on the back. So I'll turn around for a minute. Pain is weakness leaving the body. And I grow through pain. And it's my pain and hopefully not your pain. And I got to sit down or I'm going to get way off track. There's a couple of people. I want to thank Tom. You know, I met Tom, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And he says, you got to come to this conference. And I've put it off for a long time. You know, it's kind of like the guy in 74. He said, you ought to come to an AA meeting. And I said, I will someday, 8 years later, you know. And it's kind of the same thing. So last year at our home conference in Rapid City, we invited this really nice young lady to be an Al-Anon speaker. And she brought this little guy as her husband, a really nice guy named Kent. So I'm talking to Kent, and he says, do you ever go to Fellowship of the Spirit? And I said, I got to go to Fellowship of the Spirit. So now I've said it to 2 people. So now if I don't go, I'm lying. And I'm honest, right? Yeah. And you guys have a great conference. And I want to thank my new friend Jeff from Cheyenne for asking me to share just a little bit of my experience on this amazing journey that you have allowed me to be part of. You know, without you, without God, I'm nothing. And boy, you know, if you're new here, hang on. And if you've been around for a while, thanks. Thank you very much for my sobriety.
Next, we'll have Gerald V., A Common Solution from Kingston, New York.
I am Gerald, alcoholic. Really have to use the bathroom, but it's fine. I had was trying to figure out a nice way to do it this whole time. Sorry, no, I didn't hear a word anybody said. I'm recovering from altitude sickness last night, so I couldn't sleep till about 2 a.m. And the security team here are top notch. They're also medics, in case you don't know. So they came to my room last night and took my blood pressure, checked my eyes. Gave me, you know, some non-addictive medication, and I'm good to go. It's really nice to be home. I haven't been here in a long time. And first time I came to Fellowship of the Spirit, I came with a whole bag of stuff I needed to fifth step desperately. I needed a fourth step desperately. I needed a third step desperately. I needed a second step. I had no first step. Because I tell myself that all the time. Oh, I just got to fifth step that stuff. Fifth step to me is no problem if I start at one. Because I live under this delusion that if I can wrest satisfaction in this world, you know, if only I manage well. And you learn some stuff here, maybe some big book lingo, and think, well, that'll get me by for a little while. You know, pats on the back, God is good, yee hee hee. And I'm lying through my teeth. But there's a guy here named Mickey. Some of you might know him from Denver. And I couldn't stand him for so many years. I used to listen to his CD, and my wife would always go, I just love this guy. And I'm like, why? He's crying. All he does is whine and cry. And the first time I met him, I cried. I don't know how that happened. And every time I see him, I'm like, hey. Do you have a minute? I got some stuff I'm holding on to. What are you doing to me? I think that's the power of Fellowship of the Spirit rather than the spirit of the fellowship. No one's patting me on the back saying you'll be fine. Because sometimes I'm not going to be fine, even if I am working the solution. I came to the big book and I had 4 years without a drink. And what I look... I wasn't doing very well. There's only one person in this room who saw me, and she's my wife today at the time. I was sleeping with my best friend's girlfriend, hitting on newcomers, giving them my phone number, stealing treasury money, fist fights. And that's when I went to AA meetings. In between then, I was running an illegal business, and I want to thank Marty for sharing. That was great. But I remember getting to that part in the book and it said, you know, a life based on self-will can hardly be a success. I said, what do you mean? I have a nice house. I have a car. I have a business. I don't know if any of it's legal, but I got it. And Jim said to me, no, I mean inside of you. Oh, no, forget it. No. I can't take a bath without holding a radio that I'm saying I'm going to throw in. My first real arrest was 3 years sobriety because I was trying to manage well. I have a serious problem, and it's called not drinking. That is not a solution for a guy like me. And I tried desperately to do that. The only reason I think I ever even moved on with any of these steps. See, for me, the first three steps have nothing to do with God. Not for me. Because I didn't have a clue what that meant. Yes, the book talked about it. Sure, you know, the guy sitting across from me never gave me his God. We talked about alcoholism because I didn't know anything about it. Anything. And I had been coming to meetings since 1994. And if you asked me what an alcoholic was, I'd come up with a bunch of half-truths, but I really didn't know what it was. And I didn't even know that I qualified to be in the rooms of AA. And I'm really grateful for the guy who took me through the book, because when we sat down, he gave me the set-aside prayer, and he said, you don't know about yourself. You don't. You don't know anything. So whatever you think you are when you walked in this room, leave it outside, because I don't want to hear it. And I thought, well, that's kind of harsh. Maybe I should leave. But I had to get up at 4:30 to meet him by 6 a.m., and he lived an hour and a half away, so I wasn't going to leave. I had to stay and listen to him. And we read all that stuff in the beginning. And, you know, as long as I'm talking about this stuff right now, and what to do with the fourth step is I never would have done this work if I wasn't an alcoholic. My drinking when I was out there and coming to an AA did not prove it to me. What proved it to me was going through the doctor's opinion. And there is a solution, and more about alcoholism, and revealing myself and looking at this book going, I don't want to admit this, but I have also won this, you know, fatal disease. I don't want it. And even about 4 years without a drink, I couldn't walk into a grocery store without salivating over the beer cooler. And I was terrified to drink again, absolutely terrified. So if I got to go meet this guy at his Hobbit house, hour and a half away at 6 a.m. and listen to his ranting, because he cornered me at a party. And the only reason I was at the party was to go hit on my best friend's girlfriend, because I heard that he left, so I went after he left. And I'm there to get some power, and I'm at the party, and of course he's there and all these other holy rollers. Now I know them as recovered alcoholics. And if you are a recovered alcoholic, you know you don't always hang out with the so-called winners, you look for the losers. And I must have been a big loser, because I was the only guy he talked to that night. And he cornered me, and I couldn't stand him. And he gave me his phone number, and for some godforsaken reason, I kept it. And then the day I was going to drink, I called him instead. And we started going through this stuff, and I said, what do I have to do? And it says in the book, we may be asking ourselves, what do I have to do? And fortunately, I found myself already asking that. We talked about the symptom of alcoholism. And we did a third step in a diner. That was embarrassing. We didn't spend time talking about what God was or what it isn't. We just read. He read to me. I answered some questions. I had some stuff coming to me, but he told me to shut up. So I didn't want to embarrass myself any further. And I said, if it doesn't work, fine. You know, I was majorly overweight, walking with a cane. My skin was gray. Couldn't sleep. The only reason I was sober is because the Columbia County, New York mental health system. They had me so doped up that I couldn't even think about drinking. I was a mess. I couldn't drive a car. I couldn't barely work. What does this have to do with alcoholism? What does this have to do with my fourth step? And so when I come to this guy's house and we do this third step, you know, I thought we were going to get a break. We're going to just relax for a minute because that was very intense. I feel really bad about myself right now. He said, well, next we got to launch. We got to get going. There's stuff that's blocking you. That's blocking you from having your own experience with whatever God is going to happen. Whatever's going to happen for you can happen because you can't allow it. Because my ego is crowding out all truth. I'm a guy who can't differentiate the true from the false. And I was already living this lie my whole life that, you know, what I found out, and I remember, I think I heard Juanita share this a long time ago. Maybe I just made that up. But she says some great stuff. And What I found out was I wasn't an atheist. I was just terrified. Absolutely terrified. Because I kind of knew what I had done. Some of it I didn't know until I started writing, but some of it I knew. And if you knew, God knows. There's no way. I'm done. I'm hopeless. There's no hope for me. The best I can hope for is an abstinent lifestyle until I blow my brains out, because that's where I was headed. And we did that third step, and he got me a notebook, and we sat on his couch, and he got me started. I'm not a guy who has any problem writing resentment inventory. I've never been that one. I've heard this a lot. I don't have resentments. I'm a nice guy. I do a lot of things for people. I've heard that bullcrap time and time again. I'm not that guy. I have no problem doing the first three columns. I love the first three columns. They're my favorite thing about AA. I have every right in the world to be like, yeah, you got me. And if I see you again, and she never did that to me. You know, I mean, I'm a mess writing this stuff. And now, fourth column, now we can have a conversation. That's a conversation I never had before. Ever. Not with myself, not with God, and not with another human being. Ever. Ever. Fortunately, I was working half illegally, so I quit that job. So I only worked part-time. And I'm going to tell you now, for 2 weeks, I didn't write a lot. I wrote as I saw fit, and I got to tell you, I got worse. Once you start waking up a little bit, the threshold for pain just gets less and less and less. I can't believe how much selfish and psychic pain I could possibly withstand when I first came in here. You know, I mean, 30 years of self-will run riot, breaking hearts, tornado roaring through the lives of others, and I could still come in here with a fake smile and say, everything's all right. And then I come here and see Mickey and go, nothing's all right. I was fine 5 minutes ago. Because I was still seeking power from women. I heard some people say they were still smoking weed or taking pills. I was seeking power from women. And I wouldn't let it go. And I remember there was so much drama. How much drama we come in here with. You know, if I could just take care of the drama, everything would be fine. You know, this is a internal job, not an external one. And as long as I continue to live on the outside, I will continue to feel the pain on the inside. That's just the way it goes. That's spiritual law. That's just the way it works. I didn't make it up. It says a fact-facing, fact-finding process. Facts. The fact is I can't behave in a certain way and think things are going to work out the way I'd like them. That has nothing to do with I'm terrible at managing life. I'm not qualified for the job. In fact, the harder I try, I'm the kind of guy, I have a superpower, it goes backwards. The harder I try to fix something, I break it to a million pieces, then I don't know how to put it back together again. Relationships, job, money, career, self-confidence, my family. I don't know how to do these things. They seem beyond my repair. And they absolutely 100% are beyond my repair. That's a later step. And I'm writing this stuff. I call Jim. I say, I'm struggling with this, blah, 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 blah. And he said, no, I know what you're doing. You're seeking power from outside sources, and so you're avoiding looking at yourself. And I just started crying and said, yes, I am. It's exactly what I'm doing. I'm watching TV shows I never watched before. You know, I'm eating food I never ate before. You know, I'm smoking, like, you know, 2 more packs of cigarettes a day. I'm drinking right out of the coffee pot. I'm not even pouring it. And I'm walking around. I know the notebook's over there, and I'm walking. I'm going, oh, my God, stop talking to me. And I live by myself, thank God, because I was a nutcase. You spell it, you know, 4 steps like putting a stick in a bee's nest, and it stings. And every, you know, and I love sponsoring guys, and they go, why do I feel this way? You know, because you're starting to become a little sane. I never felt the appropriate feelings of selfish behavior. Hello, guilt. Guilt is a God-given gift to let me know that I'm one of you. And that I'm his kid, and I'm violating every single spiritual principle I was taught that I was born with. That's guilt. And I don't try to stuff that anymore. I'm grateful for it. And after that phone call, he said, I want you to stop playing with all your little friends. And I want you to get to business or we're done. And he didn't say it with malice. My recovery is not going to be his job. And so I got to writing, and I finished in 2 weeks. One night I fell asleep while I started a fourth column. And if you're new and you haven't started this stuff, relax. It's just life and death. So take it easy. I fell asleep one night, didn't take my medication. And I needed this to go to sleep. I don't know if anybody can identify, but for me and my story, I needed this stuff to go to sleep. I needed whatever you could knock me out with, because living the way that I was living, doing what I was doing to women and men and my family and work and money was absolutely destroying me. How can you sleep peacefully when you feel like a piece of garbage, but you want everybody to think you're the greatest thing on earth? That is no way to live. That's a way to die. And I fell asleep without taking that medication, and I woke up, and I was like, oh, my God, 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 oh, my God. And I didn't really believe in God. We were doing all this stuff. But I got on my knees, and I said, God, if this is really real, I'll do whatever you ask me to do. Of course, I reneged on that years later. Well, that's another story. I've never taken a pill since to go to sleep. I finished my inventory, and I read it, and I sleep like a baby, except last night because I had altitude sickness. But I've slept just fine, even when I have been selfish. So I started to have an awakening. 12 steps is having had a spiritual awakening. It doesn't say now we have it because we did 11 steps. I'm waking up. That's all I'm doing. I'm waking up to the fact that this is God's world all along, and all I'm writing is a resume. I'm applying for the job of manager of Gerald's life. And God took a look at it and said, you're not hired. But I have a job for you. Go out there and fix this mess of a life that you created. And I'm going to give you the power to do that. And I read this stuff to a guy. It took me 16 hours. And I've read lots of fifth steps. From East Lansing, Michigan, to Cincinnati, Ohio, to Denver, Colorado. I've read fifth steps in Don Pritz's rocking chair. I've read fifth steps in diners in Kingston, New York. I've read fifth steps over the phone from New York to Seattle. Because full disclosure is the only thing I know how to stop feeling like a piece of crap and get over myself and start joining the human race. And start being one among many. I'm not less than you. I'm not better than you. Thank God. So I don't care what you think about me right now. I don't have any inventory to write. And if I'm going to have a relationship with my wife or my son, these steps don't disappear. They go right in the toolbox. And if I know something's going on and I'm not being fully open with her, I'm not being fully open with God. My relationship with God comes first, because that is a reflection of my relationships with his kids. They are connected. And he didn't kick me out of his house. He didn't make me feel like a piece of crap. I didn't get hit with a lightning bolt. So I knew, no matter what I do, God still loves me and has a place for me at the table. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. I'd now like to open the mic for people to share their experience, strength, and hope on steps 4 and 5.
Hi, my name is JC, and I'm powerless over alcohol. When someone I love drinks it, I'm a member of Al-Anon. Thanks to the panel. Those were all great contributions to this conference. I just want to make a couple of points that I think I've learned about this fourth step and fifth step as it's outlined in those original instructions. And this is the one place, more than any other in the big book, where I understand I need to use the original instructions, not something else. If I read the steps off the wall, which I'd done, and it said, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, and I set about trying to figure out how to do that, I would have done something crazy, like maybe write this long book with hundreds of questions in it, about covering every facet of my life that had nothing to do with the causes and conditions. I might have done that. I didn't do that, but I might have. But if I start by following those instructions just the way they're printed in the book and do exactly what it says, including turning the page. It's on a different page, which I think is pretty appropriate. Turning the page and putting out of my mind the wrongs that others have done and resolutely looking for my own mistakes, not my part, my own mistakes. If I follow those instructions precisely, which is what's suggested in the foreword to the first edition, is precise instructions. If I follow those precisely and then look at what I did and look at the step on the wall and say, was that a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself? Oh, yeah. That's it was. But I would never have started with doing a resentment list and working through that process to get to my own mistakes. I couldn't get there. I've got to have those instructions. And then one other point I'd like to make about this, and that's I hear a lot of times in the Al-Anon rooms, I don't need to admit it to God because God already knows, and I admitted it to myself when I wrote it down, so it's all about admitting it to another human being. Well, I don't think the instructions would have been written that way if that were true. They wouldn't have been written as they are. I'm an agnostic. I think I'm very fortunate in that regard. I'm still an agnostic after all these years because I don't know what God is and what God does. I don't know whether God knows everything. I don't have the foggiest notion. And I'm not ever able to figure that out. The instructions say, admit it to God, to my spiritual power. And writing it down? No, writing stuff down is one way that I'm capable of lying to myself. Thinking about it in my sick mind is another way that I'm capable of lying to myself. But when I have to combine those things with telling it to another human being, I run out of ways to lie. The lies run into each other and I get caught. So I have to do all three of those parts. And I do that in that hour between my fifth step and my sixth step. I be sure that I have been honest with myself and own what I have written about. And I be sure that I have admitted it to my spiritual power. Thanks.
Hi, I'm John, a member of Al-Anon. I don't have any experience, strength, and hope for this, but I got to ask for a little help because I've been trying to do fourth, and I haven't been able to because it says write down resentments, and I have been so good at not feeling anything that I don't feel resentments. So I'm stuck. So I thought, well, somebody here might have been through the same thing and might have a solution for me, and I don't want to take up everybody's time with a solution. So I wrote a note on the message board with my email and be glad to hear from anybody who can give me some suggestions on how to get past this. So thanks.
My name's Nate. I'm an alcoholic from Portland, Maine. Thanks for having us. Through hearing everyone else's experience with the fourth and fifth step, I can't help but think about my beginning in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't experience four-column thorough inventory. I experienced something that, whatever, it is what it is. The main reason I'm bringing this up is because a few years later, I was taught how to write a thorough four-column inventory and get to some real solid truth and some freedom on the other end of that. And what did I do with it? I turned into an inventory junkie, and that's all I wanted to do all the time. I heard Tom saying last night, you know, I'd rather beg God in prayer than to use the power that he's given me to change. And I went through a period of probably, I'd say a good 3 years of writing some really, really textbook killer four-column inventory that you would look at and say, this is really good. But the fact of the matter is, there was some of the, you know, the easier stuff, like, you know, I found truth in that through that process, you know, but some of the real issues that lie at the core of this thing in my soul that make me do the things that I do and that make me stay sick and keep me in darkness, I never got to the root of those things through doing inventory based on what I thought people wanted to see. And only recently have I, gone through an inventory, and it wasn't a big inventory because I was inventorying these core things that I've never had a chance to really look at, you know? But it was pointed out to me that if you're doing this work for relief, you're in the wrong place, you know? We do steps for transformation. If you're not looking to be another person on the other end of this, don't bother, you know? And not in those words, but that's how I heard it, you know? So through doing this and doing it not so that I could bring a piece of inventory to my sponsor and say, look how good I did, you know? Copying from one template and another and pulling all the right answers into my third and fourth column, you know what I mean? And then being like, I don't even really know what that means, but I don't want to tell them that, but it just sounds really good. And this past time, like, I have things in there that I never, ever, you know, I've been sober for just about 7 years, and I don't say that for any other reason than it was just 6 months ago that I got to the core of these problems. You know what I mean? Like, only then was I able to peel back enough to get humble and to really expose that wound for what it was. And only now have I been able to start to heal from those things. And it's a lifetime thing. Like, us alcoholics, we have a spiritual disease, and our souls have scars all over them, you know? And I'm under no delusion that a magic inventory will fix me today. I know that I'm going to have to continue to heal those from the inside out for the rest of my life, and I'm good with that, you know? I'm here to play the role that he assigns, not the one that I choose. So thanks for letting me share.
I'm Kenny. I'm an alcoholic. Kenny. Today I have 15 days of sobriety. I've partied pretty hard for like 30 years straight, and I've tried quitting bunches of times, and as I get more sober and things start going good, I start thinking and craving to drink again, and as soon as I do, once I start drinking, I crave more, and then I don't know what's going to happen after that, and I end up sick, and crying for help, and start the whole process again. And my insanity just keeps me thinking that AA is all screwed up. And but I'm trying it again, and maybe this time, I'll keep on with the program and heal up some more this time and stay healing up. And I just wanted to get up here and say I'm coming back to the program, and hopefully things will change for me, and I could start making amends to people and myself and stay with the program this time. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Teresa, alcoholic addict. And I just want to thank the panel so much for everything you've shared. Touched my heart, made me cry, and I'm just so grateful. And I've just been through a whole fourth-step process. I'm actually now onto the amends place. But my sponsor had a new tool that she shared with me, and there's a little book over here called Big Book Awakening that she had me print out some pages, and because I'm really dense, I have a really hard time looking at resentments and things like that, and it made it so much easier for me. Of course, with her guidance, we went through line by line using that particular tool, and I actually got more insight than I ever had before. And this was just an individual situation that I had to do a four-step on. And so I just want to share that because, the book is great. I love the book. It helps me. And this gave me even more knowledge about, this whole process and looking at my part, which is the part that I don't ever want to look at. So thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Kiri.
Hi, Kiri.
And I'm a very grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups, and I kind of feel like I need to throw up, so I either have altitude sickness or it's time to share. We'll find out which one. And thank you to the panel. And what I was thinking about is that, you know, I hear all the time people are afraid to do the four-step, and the only people that I know who are afraid to do the four-step are people who haven't done it yet. And I know that it's not supposed to be a hurtful or a harmful process. And there was an Al-Anon friend of mine shared that her sponsor had her write at the top of each page, God still loves me, or God loves me, and at the bottom of each page, God still loves me. And I had shared that with my sponsor at some point, and I am somebody who I feel like I have failed to live up to my own expectations, and I feel like everybody else is exactly where they're supposed to be, and they're serving God, and they're exactly who they're supposed to be, and somehow I missed out, and I messed up, and that's what I live with. And and when I sat down to do the four-step with my sponsor, and she gave me the instructions, she told me to write at the top of each page, I am the child that God always wanted. And at the bottom of each page, to write, I am still the child of God that God always wanted. And that's been something that has been, you know, for some reason, I think that all of you guys are exactly where you're supposed to be. And I missed out. I failed somehow. And I don't know why that is still what I live with after all this time, after enough four steps, for some reason. But I know that today, we are all the children that God wanted. Thanks.
Thank you all for your share. We will now close. The group conscience of the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference does not close each meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Instead, we encourage that the entire conference be treated with an attitude of continuous prayer, and we will then say the Lord's Prayer together at the close of the conference on Sunday. Please help me close this meeting by joining hands for a moment of silence. Let us share our spiritual experience and strength with each other so that we may grow together in greater understanding and love. Thank you.